You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
David Locke, the host of Locked On NBA and Locked On Jazz, joining me to talk about Rodney Hood. David, what was just your initial reaction to Rodney Hood being dealt to the Cavs? What was your just initial reaction to what his fit's going to be with LeBron James on this Cavs team?
So from a LeBron James fit, I think it'll be interesting. I actually think if you look at Rodney Hood's shot profile and who he is as a player, he's pretty similar to J.R. Smith. Goes to the line very rarely, great three-point shooter. You know, Rodney's ability is to get, has ability to JR probably doesn't have her off the bounce. He can really go get any shot off because he jumps so high on his jumper. Not the age, you know, not the old JR, you know, but the, you know, JR Smith that you guys have had for the last few years is probably the best example. Or even his last years in New York, where just not a lot of free throw attempts, lots of three pointers, good 3-point shooter. Rodney's probably similar, if not a little bit better this year. And so in that sense, if he plays that role, it'll be terrific. He's in a contract year. He really wanted to be the man in Utah. That did not work out well. And so I am certain he's not going to try to be the man with LeBron around. But how is he going to kind of fit into the group? I'm not clear.
You say he tried to be the man and that didn't work out. What was his role on this Jazz team? And how did him going to try to fill that gap Gordon Hayward left, how did that not work out, and where does he stand right now as he comes to Cleveland?
Well, he was going to be the primary scorer without Gordon, and then he just had issues to start the year. I mean, if we go back, and particularly, you know, kind of going really deep, but first quarters early in the year were just miserable, to the point in which that's the Jazz made that change because and brought him off the bench because he was just struggling badly. I mean, 22%, 23% shooting in first quarters. Donovan was emerging, and it just became clear that Donovan Mitchell was going to be ready to do that. And so they made that change, and I don't think he was ever very happy with that. You know, he didn't say anything inappropriate. He did the right things. He had some comments just, you know, recently that showed a little bit of the fact of some frustration, but I just think he wasn't comfortable. If you go back and look to start the year, I mean, we're talking his opening 1-for-3, 0-for-1, 1-for-2, 1-for-5, 0-for-1, 0-for-2, 1-for-3, 0-for-2. And those are his starting first quarters to start the year. And finally, you know, when you're your primary offense and that's what you're doing in the first quarters every night, and you never scored more than one field goal in the first quarter in the first 10 games of the year, they finally made a change.
Is he a good defensive player?
Not particularly, though. It's not that he doesn't try. He's not an elite athlete. He's elite at getting a shot off. So he can really, he rises up high in the jumper, high left-handed shot, can't get blocked, can get it off just about anywhere he wants on the floor, other than right around the rim. But he's not an elite athlete in the sense defensively, and I think he might have had the worst on-floor defensive rating of any of our players.
When you look at what he is going to be on this Cavs team, he's joining a crowded group of wings. LeBron obviously is going to play there. Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, Jordan Clarkson now will probably maybe play some off-ball minutes there as well. Rookie Jetty Osman. Where do you see him falling in that hierarchy? Is he someone that should start and play the bulk of the minutes? Should he come off the bench? What is, in your mind, the kind of role you'd like to see the Cavs try to put him in, at least to start?
Well, he's going to win you some games. Like, he won a game for us just the other night, dropped 30, right? 12 of 15 shooting. And he's, you know, he has these nights. You know, he had 31 against Orlando on 12 of 21, hitting 7 of 13 from three. This is where he kind of reminds me of J.R. Smith. He had 26 against Houston. We got blown out that night. He had a 29-point night against San Antonio where we won. He also, though, he played 39 games this year in – in 11 of those 39 games, he shot 33% or less. And when you don't go to the free throw line a lot, if he's one of your primary guys, those are killers, right? I mean, I think we were 3-8 in those 11 games in which he has that kind of shooting night. I mean, that's the crazy one for the Jazz was, you know, they were 3-8 in those games, and they, I think, were 10-5 in the 15 games he missed. And so if he actually had a half-decent shooting night, the Jazz won a lot of games. But when you're a real jump shooter, takes a lot of threes, doesn't go to the line a lot, you have those nights. If you have a really primary role, as he did with the Jazz, then it's hard for that team to win. So there's got to be a balance for Cleveland in which you give him enough so that he can give you that 12 of 14 night, that 7 of 14 night where he's hit 3 or 4 threes, and somehow you don't get hit by that 5 of 17, 5 of 19, 4 of 17, 3 of 14 night.
What is your overall take on this trade for the Cavs? As you look at this team, you were in Cleveland, you saw them up close, and you've seen how badly they've looked of late. How the players they get: Larry Nance, George Hill, another ex-Jazz player, Rodney Hood. How much do you think these moves actually help this team?
Well, I mean, I think I think if you can use Rodney in the manner which I just talked about, I think you really might have something pretty good. I don't know if I know the Cavs well enough to know how much you're relying on. I mean, again, kind of using that same metric I just gave you a second ago, he played 59 games last year. 30 of the 59, he shot 33% or below. So in half of them. But on the other end, as a shooting guard who doesn't go to the free throw line, he had 17 games where he shot above 50%. Like, the bell curve on performance by Rodney Hood is really wide ranging. And when it's good, it's really good. But he's not pizza. When it's bad, it's still bad. Right? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, bad pizza is still good, right? There's another thing other than pizza we often use in this analogy. I thought I'd pass. So I don't know the answer to that question, in the sense I don't know how you're going to be able to use him. If he's able to get that rhythm and get those nights and doesn't feel that burden and maybe relaxes a little bit and those bad nights don't compile on themselves, then he might be terrific. But he's got some real offensive ability to get a shot off.
I think the J.R. Smith comp is something that should help. George Hill is not the same type of creator the Cavs have had a point guard, whether that was Kyrie or the version of Isaiah Thomas they had. So I think if he can, the little bit of playmaking he could provide, I think could be a really could be a really big thing for them. And
I think he had one game last. Let's see. So playmaking, he had last year. He only had, I think, 5 games all year with more than 3 assists.
But if he can just dribble a little bit and attack a little bit, I think that would be a big thing. Because I think one of the
and that attack is to 8-9 feet. Like, and then he gets it up and over people in a really neat way.
Yeah,
it's not all the way to the rim. He's not a rack attack guy.
Which is something J.R. Smith doesn't do. He doesn't do it off. Doesn't maybe once a game where he gets in the lane and throws up a floater, and it's not the prettiest floater in the world. The last guy, we'll just wrap it up on this. George Hill played for the Jazz last year, went to the Kings. He had the toe issue in Utah. He hasn't played well in Sacramento. He shot well of late, but overall hasn't been necessarily the George Hill we expect. Do you think he fits, though, in a vacuum as the type of point guard next to LeBron, and not a ball dominant guy, but a guy that can, if he's right, should be able to shoot and defend well?
I do. I think he could be. He's a good version of. He's a better version of Jose Calderon, really, right? He's like, I mean, a lot better. But that kind of just get you into your systems and go, and then all your best 5-man lineups have LeBron as the point guard. And so then George Hill becomes a spot up shooter, and he's great, and he's one of the better, you know, catch and shoot. When he gets a catch and shoot, it's going down. So I think he really could adjust very, very well. He's got great playoff experience. He's got, you know, understands exactly what the moments are. Pretty good leader. So I think he'll be engaged. I think he could be a really good match. One note on Rodney. Let me give you a really good note on Rodney. There's only 4 guys in the league that shoot over 40% on off the bounce threes that take 2 a game. So he takes 2 off the bounce threes a game, and he shoots over 40% on those. George Hill actually takes one a game, shoots over 40%. George Hill's catch and shoot numbers are incredible. I think this year he's at 47, 48%. Last year he was around that same 40, 45% for much of the year. Fell as the year went on when that toe bothered him. But that's he's a great shooter.
It is going to be very, very interesting to see how this works out for the Cavs. They're betting a lot on it. We'll be following along here on Locked On Cavs. Well, you can find David on Twitter at Locked On Sports. David, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining us next, Anthony Irwin, host of Locked On Lakers. Anthony, what was your just general reaction to this trade between the Cavs and the Lakers that went down on the first big deal of trade deadline day?
Wait, there was a trade?
Breaking news. Breaking news alert. Whoa.
It was honestly, I kind of sort of, on one hand, I was surprised because everything that we've heard to this point was that the Lakers were probably going to be pretty quiet on deadline day, and they weren't going to really do anything, and they were just kind of licking their wounds because they didn't get any of the offers that they were looking to get. But the more I kind of thought about it, especially in the last few hours, it's been a lot of, no, of course they were just posturing. Like, just a month of not getting the offers that you want isn't going to make somebody like Magic Johnson admit that he was wrong to do something right or change course that quickly. So I was kind of surprised, obviously, because of the names involved of coming from the Cavs or the name involved coming from the Cavs. But it really does make sense for both teams, right? I DM'd you afterward when you were reaching out to get me on here, and that was the first thing that really pops into my mind is that it does make sense for both teams.
100% agree it makes sense for both teams. I think we're going to get into the two Lakers, but just real quick on Isaiah, I think I'm very curious to see how that plays out in L.A. I am very curious to see what that machination of Lakers looks like. I think you're going to love Channing Frye. That is you get A, you get road tripping, and B, we're going to get Lonzo and LeVar road tripping probably, and I'm going to listen to that like 30 times, but I think for the Cavs, the players coming this way makes sense. I think Lance over Randall for this Cavs team makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
I think Clarkson can make sense in a vacuum. But let's start with Nance. What is Larry Nance like? You can read the Zach Lowe piece where he gets a lot of praise, but what is Larry Nance as a basketball player, and how do you see him fitting with the Cavs?
He's that stereotypical work hard lunch pail kind of guy, right? Like he's going to be. He might wind up being one of the most popular Cavs over the entirety of his time there. He's the kind of guy that I feel like that fan base will really enjoy, because like Matthew Dellavedova got a ton of praise just because it looked like he was working hard all the time. Nance is the same way. He just always he's always diving on the ground. He'll step in and take a charge. He sometimes gets himself into trouble with over-rotation sometimes because he is such an incredible athlete. I think he needs to hone it down a little bit. But he is just he's a great team player for a good team. And unfortunately out here while he was with the Lakers, he was never on a good team. Now, he does have holes. He is completely risk-averse. There are some moments where he won't even throw the right outlet pass if it looks like it might be a turnover. He will pass up on a lot of jumpers. In a playoff series, he'll become unplayable because the team that you'll be playing against will just back completely off of him, and he still won't take the jumper. He is every single summer since he has been drafted by the Lakers, he has said that he's worked his tail off on becoming a better three-point shooter. It's just that we've reached that point in his career where it's kind of asinine to expect it at this point. But overall, I think you guys will really enjoy him. And he'll murder people like once every three games with an insane dunk.
I'm very curious to see if he can get better at some of the and better is not the right word because I can't say like I know the technical details of his game. That's why you're here. But I think he is going to be interesting as just kind of an auxiliary fit around better players than he had in LA. And that's no shade on, you know, the guys he's playing with, but he's playing with LeBron now. He's playing with Kevin Love now. I think that should benefit him. My personal opinion is I kind of want to see what he would look like as a starting five with Thompson coming off the bench. And I don't know how that would work out and everything, but I'm kind of intrigued by that.
My two concerns regarding his fit out there is, can LeBron still play the three? Because I still think that the best lineups that the Cavs have feature LeBron at the four, right? Whether it's with Love playing the five or Thompson playing the five or Fry playing the five before. It'd be interesting to see what Nance looks like with LeBron playing the four next to him. I just think in general LeBron is the best power forward in the game. And if he can play the three, Nance becomes a lot more valuable because now he's just that glue guy that he can switch on everything and he makes Kevin Love's life a lot easier and he makes LeBron's life a lot easier. If you have the 3-4-5 with those guys, then cool. But if LeBron does continue to be better suited as a four, then it's kind of tough to find minutes for Nance. He's going to play like 10 minutes a game for you guys, I would imagine.
Well, he's going to play more to start because Kevin Love is out, and the Cavs don't really have many. Like, Ante Zizic and Jeff Green are going to have to play more, basically. And Zizic has negligibly played this year. I think him as a Jay Crowder's exit and all of this means that it's harder for the Cavs to play LeBron at the four. I mean, Jeff Green is kind of the key to that. And Jeff Green's been good this year. He's not shooting threes well. LeBron's shooting has kind of tailed off of late. So that's a good subplot to watch. To look at Clarkson, the contract for him is not something I love.
No.
I know he should. I buy into the idea that he's probably going to shoot a little bit better playing with LeBron and playing alongside better players. I tend to buy that argument. Guys tend to get better playing with LeBron. What is your read on Clarkson with the Cavs?
So I have a tweet that's done pretty well today where it's that Spider-Man meme and the other Spider-Man that's pointing at the other guy is like half as small as the other Spider-Man. And that's really what it is. He's very similar to Isaiah Thomas. He's less ball dominant. He doesn't need as many dribbles and he doesn't have the ego that makes him think that he deserves to have all of those dribbles. So that'll be useful. He's longer and he's obviously stronger than Isaiah Thomas. So that means that he's at least, and he is just objectively better than Isaiah.
He has a working hip too.
He has a working hip. It was funny. Harrison and I had this conversation on the show a couple weeks ago or maybe a few shows ago where we were talking about potential deals. And one of the deals that I thought about was something centered around Clarkson and Isaiah Thomas. And you know, Harrison kind of balked at the idea because he thought that the biggest name coming back for Kyrie Irving can't then be traded for Jordan Clarkson, which, okay. But I made the argument, and I still actually really believe it, that Jordan Clarkson is objectively better than Isaiah Thomas is right now. Like, for all the excitement that the Lakers got out of Clarkson's contract and they got this first-round pick, they are a worse team right now than they were when we woke up this morning. And it's because I don't trust Isaiah Thomas as a basketball player, and Channing Frye hasn't been necessarily as good as he has been in years past. But yeah, Clarkson, he's very good at distributing if he doesn't have to use his peripheral vision. He's very good defending on the ball, but he gets lost and he dies on screens. And he will go through stretches where everything that he touches will find its way to the basket. If he gets a handoff from LeBron going to his strong hand, to his right hand, and he gets momentum, he's very good at turning the corner and getting to the rim. So if you have sufficient spacing around him, that's what I think is going to really benefit Clarkson the most, is having spacing so that when he has paths to the rim, they are way less obstructive than they've been out here in LA.
Wrap it up in this. Listeners, Anthony and I are going to link up again and do a dive in on the money side of this deal that is 100% worth getting into. Just not today. Not yet. We need time to kind of look through this a little bit and what this means for next summer. So all-star break around-ish, look for that. But what is your, when you look at what these guys are going to, what you think they're going to provide in Cleveland, what their roles will be, what grade would you give the Cavs, this specific part of the Cavs' moves, what grade would you give them getting these two guys for Channing Frye, Isaiah Thomas, both expiring contracts who maybe weren't going to be with the team next year, and their first round pick, which is the in my opinion, the thing that's a little bit too much, but it, from everything I've read at least, the deal doesn't seem like it happens without that pick, so maybe you have to do it, and you just have to live with it.
So I actually, one of the theories that I had, and we can talk about this later when we talk about the money side of it, but I actually kind of thought that Kobe Altman sent over the Cleveland pick just so that he can go to LeBron and say, hey, I would try to move the Brooklyn pick, but I literally can't now. You know, like that kind of awkward conversation.
Cue the conspiracy. Cue it.
Yeah. It'd be kind of an interesting angle, an interesting dynamic to it. But in terms of on the court, I think the Cavs are better right now with these two guys than the two guys that they were with the two guys that they sent over to LA. They're younger, which is also kind of nice, just in case LeBron does move on. But Clarkson, I had this conversation, and it almost started a fight with a Celtics blogger over Summer League this past summer. And it was basically that I trust Kyrie being a defensive player more than I would trust Isaiah Thomas being a defensive player, because it's effort with Kyrie. It's ability with Isaiah. And Clarkson is able to be a mediocre defender. He is able to be a not travesty on that end. And that makes the Cavs better. So I think he'll be an off guard who will play every so often with LeBron, and he can help the second unit with some scoring. I would be kind of hesitant to make him the starting point guard, though your starting point guard isn't normally, he won't be the starting point guard. You guys have George Hill. So yeah, I think with that acquisition, and with everything else that goes there, Clarkson fits really well as a scoring guard off of the bench. And then Nance is just that energy guy. Maybe he starts while Kevin Love recovers, but he's just going to be that energy guy who you stick in there and you say, hey, go get me every loose ball. Go switch and make everybody's life miserable on defense. Go dunk on somebody and rile the crowd up like that. Both of those guys are easy enough to fit with a playoff roster on the fly, which I think is the most underrated and maybe most actually important aspect of all this, is that you got two guys who are easy enough to make work while actual huge rotational pieces figure things out together in a 30 game stretch.
It's going to be fascinating. Kevin Love has to come back. These guys have to work out. Then they're in the case of Nance, contract negotiations this summer. Going to be a fascinating time. Anthony Irwin, find one through at Anthony Irwin LA. Listen to Locked On Lakers. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.